Earlier today, the House voted to override the president's veto of the National Defense Authorization Act. Now it will go to the Senate for a vote. We'll have more on that in a moment. Welcome to Washington Today. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some headlines. President Donald Trump signed a $2 trillion-plus dollar COVID-19 relief package and annual federal spending package on Sunday, providing relief for millions of Americans. Congress returned today, and along with the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, veto override vote, members are set to take up a bill to increase the $600 direct payment in the bill to a $2,000 check that the president has asked for. The House is scheduled to vote on the measure Monday evening. You can read more at apnews.com. More people traveled through U.S. airports on Sunday than any other day this pandemic, setting the stage for waves of new infections across the country. Over 1.28 million people passed through security checkpoints. That's according to the Transportation Security Administration. At the same time, more Americans were hospitalized this past week than any other week of the pandemic, according to the COVID Tracking Project. Six states set new records Sunday for the most COVID-19 patients hospitalized: Alabama, California, Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. You can read more at CNN.com. And Representative Louie Gohmert, Republican of Texas, and President Donald Trump's defeated electors from Arizona may force Vice President Mike Pence to publicly pick a side in President Trump's bid to overturn his 2020 election loss. According to Politico, quote, Gohmert and a handful of the would-be electors sued Vice President Pence in federal court on Monday in a long-shot bid to throw out the rules that govern Congress's counting of electoral votes next week. It's an effort they hope will permit Vice President Pence, who was tasked with leading the January 6th session of the House and Senate, to simply ignore President-elect Joe Biden's electors and count President Trump's losing slates instead. The lawsuit asserts that the 1887 law known as the Electoral Count Act, the vague statute that has long governed the electoral vote counting process with minimal drama, unconstitutionally binds Vice President Pence from exercising total authority to choose which votes to count. End quote. You can find more at Politico.com. We begin now in the House today, where members voted to override President Trump's veto of the $741 billion NDAA. President Trump made good on repeated threats to veto the legislation last week when he sent the bill back to Congress with a list of objections. The president had several complaints, including that the bill ordered the Pentagon to change the names of military installations commemorating Confederate generals, restricted his ability to pull U.S. troops out of Germany, South Korea, and Afghanistan, and did not repeal an unrelated law giving certain liability protections to technology companies. From the House floor earlier today, here's Representative Mac Thornberry, Republican of Texas and ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee.
Madam Speaker, I thank the chairman for yielding and once again want to commend him for his stewardship of the committee through very challenging times. Madam Speaker, I continue to support this bill, as more than 80% of the House did just 20 days ago. It's the exact same bill. Not a comma has changed. It still prevents the military from having their pay cut. It still creates new tools to deal with a newly aggressive China. It still includes the important U.S.-Israel Assistance Act and provides help for Vietnam veterans. One thing, I guess, is new in the past few days because a devastating cyber attack by Russia has been exposed. But fortunately, this bill has dozens of provisions to help strengthen the country's defenses in cyber. So the president has exercised his constitutional prerogative. Now, Madam Speaker, it's up to us, our troops, the country, indeed the world, is watching to see what we will do. Whether we can tune out other differences and still come together to support the men and women of the military and American national security. I would only ask that as members vote, they put the best interests of the country first, there is no other consideration that should matter. This vote is about supporting our troops and defending America. While not perfect, this bill does a good job of advancing both and should be supported once again. I yield back the balance of my time.
That was Texas Republican Mac Thornberry earlier today on the House floor. Since the summer, the National Defense Authorization Act, an annual measure authorizing funds for everything from overseas military operations to pay increases for service members, has had overwhelming veto-proof support in both chambers of Congress and the backing of a majority of each political party. Here is Representative Adam Smith, Democrat of Washington and chair of the House Armed Services Committee, earlier today on the House floor.
There are all kinds of crucial provisions in this bill, but I'll just point to one, and that's the one that Mr. Thornberry mentioned earlier, to give you an idea of why it is important that the legislative branch do its job in exercising oversight of the Department of Defense in providing national security policy. And that's the cyber issue. Thanks to the leadership of Chairman Langevin, chairman of the subcommittee that deals with this issue, Ranking Member Stefanik, they have worked together to really put together an incredible package to try to better address these very cyber issues that we are now facing. That is what we do in this legislation. And, you know, it's not always exciting, but it's incredibly important to meet our obligation to our troops and to the national security of this country. It is enormously important that we pass this bill. We did it once. Let's just do it one more time, and then we can all go home for the year. We can be done, and we can be proud of what we have accomplished. I urge members to vote in favor of this bill, to do what we did just a couple weeks ago, show the country that the legislative branch can still do its job. I guess I'll just close on one note, which we make a lot of times, but this is the most bipartisan committee in Congress. That's not an easy thing to achieve. We have a lot of things that we passionately disagree about in this body, and we should. But on the Armed Services Bill, we managed to come together. It's not always easy, but we get it done. I think it is enormously important that we let the country know that that process hasn't died. We put together a product, a bipartisan, bicameral product that has gotten an overwhelming number of votes. Let's show the American public that the legislative process works at least a little bit better than sometimes they think it does, that we can get our job done, and in this case, get our job done for the men and women who put their lives on the line to protect this country. We owe them nothing less than that. I urge a yes vote.
Representative Adam Smith, Democrat of Washington, earlier today on the House floor. According to the Washington Post, quote, over several weeks, many leading Republicans, particularly in the Senate, engaged in a concerted effort to get Trump to back off his veto threat, arguing that if Trump's push to retain the Confederate names kept the defense bill for the first time in six decades from becoming law, he would be on the wrong side of history. They also appealed to President Trump to abandon his insistence that the bill repeal Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a law that shields social media companies from legal liability for what third parties post to their websites. Trump has taken special aim at the law as part of his vendetta against Facebook, Google, and Twitter for what he alleges is anti-conservative bias. End quote. You can find more at thewashingtonpost.com. So far, President Trump has vetoed 9 bills, which is more than either President Obama or President George W. Bush. This is Washington Today. Earlier today in Wilmington, Delaware, President-elect Joe Biden delivered remarks after meeting with key members of his national security and foreign policy teams. He outlined what some of the major challenges will be when he takes office on January 20th. He also addressed the Christmas suicide bombing in Nashville and thanked first responders and remarked, quote, the hearts of all Americans are with Nashville, end quote. Here is the president-elect.
And right now, as our nation is in a period of transition, we need to make sure that nothing is lost in the handoff between administrations. My team needs a clear picture of our force posture around the world and our operations to deter our enemies. We need full visibility into the budget planning underway at the Defense Department and other agencies in order to avoid any window of confusion or catch-up that our adversaries may try to exploit. But as I said from the beginning, we have encountered roadblocks from the political leadership at the Department of Defense and the Office of Management and Budget. Right now, we just aren't getting all the information that we need for the ongoing, outgoing, and from the outgoing administration in key national security areas. It's nothing short, in my view, of irresponsibility. Finally, we spoke about the day one challenge that we're going to need to address immediately, drawing on the skill sets of the Department of Homeland Security and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We were briefed on the steps needed to clean up the humanitarian disaster that the Trump administration has systematically created on our southern border. We will institute humane and orderly responses. That means rebuilding the capacity we need to safely and quickly process asylum seekers without creating near-term crisis in the midst of this deadly pandemic. These are hard issues, and the current administration has made them much harder by working to erode our capacity. It's going to take time to rebuild that capacity. We're going to work purposely, diligently, and responsibly to roll back Trump's restrictions starting on day one. But it is not as simple as throwing a switch to turn everything back on, especially amid a pandemic. We'll have to have a process to ensure everyone's health and safety, including the safety of asylum seekers, hoping for a new start in the United States, free of violence and persecution. Of course, an essential part of this will be managing the safe, equitable, and efficient distribution of vaccinations to as many Americans as possible, as quickly as possible. FEMA has an enormous part to play in this. And we heard from the former FEMA director, Craig Fugate, today. We want to make sure that our administration is poised to make full use of FEMA's domestic reach and capacity in managing our COVID response. And finally, from every briefer, I was heartened. I was literally heartened to hear about the incredible strength we'll be inheriting in the career professionals and working people across these agencies.
That was President-elect Joe Biden earlier today in Delaware. And finally today, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said the New York Attorney General is investigating whether a healthcare clinic in the state fraudulently obtained COVID-19 doses and distributed them to the public. Governor Cuomo declined to provide details of the investigation because it's ongoing, but he noted that it involves ParCare Community Health Network, which the state identified as a provider in Orange County, New York. From earlier today in Albany, here's Governor Cuomo.
Another issue popped up because every day is a new issue to deal with. Possible fraud by a healthcare provider. And you're going to see more and more of this. The vaccine is a valuable commodity. And you have many people who want the vaccine. And you'll have fraud in the vaccine process. It's almost an inevitable function of human nature and of the marketplace. Vaccines are valuable. And there'll be people who break the law. And we're looking at one healthcare provider who may have done that. The New York State Police has actually been pursuing an investigation. They're going to refer that case to the Attorney General's office, Attorney General Letitia James, and her office is going to take it on and make it a priority. And we want to send a clear signal to the providers that if you violate the law on these vaccinations, we will find out and you will be prosecuted. I'm going to sign an executive order that says we're very clear, the vaccines are a priority, there's not going to be any politics at play as to who gets a vaccine. And we look to the CDC, federal government, for guidance, and we will not tolerate any fraud in the vaccination process. Anyone who engages in fraud is going to be held accountable. The executive order I'm going to sign today says a provider could be fined up to $1 million and revocation of all state licenses, which frankly may be more of a deterrent than the $1 million. And that will apply to a provider, a doctor, a nurse, a pharmacist, any licensed healthcare professional. So if you engage in fraud on this vaccine, we will remove your license to practice in the state of New York.
That was New York Governor Andrew Cuomo earlier today during a press briefing. Governor Cuomo said he will sign an executive order today delineating the consequences of defrauding the state when it comes to vaccine distribution. He said the state may fine violators up to $1 million, and the state will revoke the healthcare provider's license to practice in New York. You can find his entire briefing on our website at cspan.org. Well, that's it for us on Washington Today. Remember, if you missed any part of this program, find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Enjoy the rest of your evening.